I confess that I love starting with slides like this because I know they get an instant reaction in the crowd, one way or the other. Some of you are like, yeah, I love that. And others of you are, I think I'm a barf. And I understand that. Some of us enjoy the whole thought of goals and checklists and what are we going to accomplish today or this year. And others, of course, that is just the most boring, dry, impersonal, you name it, whatever bad word I can use in public, process. And I would like to avoid that if at all possible. And yet, whatever our views on goals and priorities, I think down inside, we all would agree that there are some things that are more important than others. I mean, we relatively are still at the beginning of 2018. And I think most of us would agree that as I look at the year that's coming, for every one of us, there's probably some things that are more important that I work on this year than others. They're not all equal, and they don't all not matter. There are some things that are going to make me a better person or will help my family be in a better place or may help some other person that I care about around me. And those are probably more important that I work on those or spend some time on them or some money or pay attention to them. And I think we all would agree that there are some things that are more important. Of course, the bigger question I think becomes, how do we know what those are? In the grand scheme of things, as we stand and look ahead towards a year, a month, whatever, how do we know what is more important that I focus on? Well, before we answer that question, and we are going to answer that today, there's one other question I need to ask you today because it affects the first answer. And so the second question I have to ask you is there a God? Obviously, in where we're sitting, I would say there is a great likelihood that most in this room would somehow say, yeah, there is. Although I don't think we should assume that everybody here would agree with that. But it does affect everything else. Because if we would say there isn't a God, then how I answer what is best would look different than if I would say, well, there is a God. Of course, I'm standing before you today because I've reached a point of saying, I believe there is a God. And I have to confess to you, it's not just based on the arguments of Scripture or even history, but the more I understand of our universe, the more I understand of our human bodies, the more I understand of molecular and atomic structure, I don't know how you don't see a God there. In all of that order, and all of that creativity and just everything about life, how can there not be a God? But of course, if there is a God, then maybe the first question would be, well, what's important to Him? As I stand and look at my life for the coming year and say, well, what's really important for me? What do I need to worry about, take care of? If there's a God, then maybe I should pause and say, well, what's important to Him? Does God have priorities for me this year? And so if we take that question a little bit first and say, well, what's most important to God? What is most important to Him? Most of us would probably say, well, I guess if you want to know that answer, we need to go to the Bible. And what's it going to say? The only problem is it's a big book, isn't it? So we look at that daunting book of really 66 books and say, oh, what's more important to Him? Whoa, there's a lot of important stuff to Him. In Jesus' day, they were very serious about this. And they had lots of time on their hands. They didn't have TV or internet. And so they had analyzed all, well, they didn't have 66 books. They had the Old Testament. But they'd analyzed it all, and they had been able to come up, there's 613 specific commands of God. 613. We said there were a lot. It's like, whoa, whew, that's a lot. We thought 10 commandments was a lot. Well, in Jesus' day, they tried to say, okay, well, what of those are most important? They'd come up with a couple categories. they're pretty much like us. One of their categories was easy and hard. So you could divide the 613 to easy and hard, and we have their records. They had that list. Well, then they'd also say, you know, some, and it's interesting, some have more weight. That was a term they used. Some of those 613 are heavier. In other words, they're more important. We better really pay attention to those. But of course, there was all kinds of debates about the 613 and how you divide them up and how you list them and prioritize them. And Jesus got drawn into the argument. And they were doing it as a trap. But he got drawn into what was a very real discussion. What is most important to God? Which does affect us as we started today's sermon. So if you want to read with me, and you're familiar with it, or a lot of you will be, Matthew 22, 36 through 40. Aaron, not coincidentally, but through the Spirit's prompting, perhaps already referenced this for us, and his Sunday school class was looking at it. So it starts off with a question that draws Jesus in. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? How do you divide up the 613? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Then he goes on to talk about a second one. But then at the end he says, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, I think a lot of us, if we were honest, and we said, I get to ask God, what is the most important thing for me to do in 2018? I think a lot of us would think of some specific actions. You know, I need to go become a missionary. I need to give this large gift. I need to do this, and I need to do this. And we would set some lofty goals. We're going to start a new ministry here. I think in our humanness, in our culture, those would tend to be the things we would tend to focus on. What can we accomplish for God? And the reason I say that is I think Jesus' answer is a little bit surprising. In all the 613 commandments and in all the things God is trying to do in our world, in a war with Satan to fight and drive back evil and advance his kingdom, what is the thing that he says more than anything else to God? He wants you to love him with all your heart, mind, and soul. I think that is a bit astounding. Of all that Jesus could have picked and all the lofty goals, he says the most important thing is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. What does God want if we could give him his one wish? That we would love him. It's not even read our Bible every day or tithe or do these good deeds. It's God says, would you just love me back? Would you love me? Would you truly, fully love me? Why do you think that's so important to God? If you think about it, there's an obvious answer. Who are the people you want the most to love you back? Wouldn't we say the people we love the most dearly? Those are the ones I'm desperate for them to love me back above all else. The ones I already love the most. So why is it God would say more than anything else what I want from you? What he really is saying is that what I want from you is that you would love me back. You see, this priority from God is really a response. We don't love God so that he might love us. We're not the ones who come up with the topic of loving each other. It's God. God initiates this. He loves us first. And it's out of that love that he already has for us. He casts that love out for us. And he says, I hope they'll love me back. It's like you see that girl when you're dating, And you have that discussion, don't you? Do I have a chance? You know, she's so... not girls would never do this, I understand, but guys do. Do I have a chance? They'll love me back. But I got to try because I can't not think about her. God says, I have loved you with an incredible love, and my one wish, it's not about all the doing, my one wish is that you will love me back. You see, it's that love that we're going to celebrate as we end this service with communion. And it is that love that's already there. And what God has done for us to show his love, prove his love, Paul says. That he says, now my hope is, after risking it all, going out on a limb, putting it out there, this is how I feel, my number one wish is that you'll love me back. Now, Jesus is pretty honest. It's not just any kind of love. It's not just that we, hi God, how are you? We show up and worship once a week. Jesus said that's not the kind of love he wants back. That's not the kind of love he's given. I was thinking about our sort of surface kind of love. And you know the Minnesota wave? You know, you're driving one finger. I live in a... it's sort of a, it's not a dead-end street, but not, you don't go through our neighborhood, you just go there. We've lived there 11 years, and there's not been a lot of turnover, so you recognize most of the people who live back in the neighborhood. And so you see the truck coming, and you know who it is, so it's sort of... I probably don't even know their name, maybe. I know what house they live on. You know, it's the red house around the corner. He works there. Or I know his truck. He works for Xfinity. We have lots of people like that, don't we? And that's okay. But if I really loved them, I'd want more than that, wouldn't I? And God says, I need more than I. Which is sometimes all we give him on Sunday. Hi, God, I'm here. Or we might, in a desperate predicament on Wednesday, say, God, remember me? He says, no, I really want more than that. And Jesus uses three words to sort of give us the picture of a love that is all of us. It is our mind. It's our thinking. It's what's going on in our head. And God is a part of that. And he's at the center of that because we love him. But it's not just some intellectual facts and some thoughts and some truths. It is also the heart. Our emotions. Our feelings. It is that caring for him. He gets us emotional. You see me cry. It's interesting how many people... sorry, I'm going to cry here. I've gotten over apologizing for it. I tried to quit. I can't. You have no idea when I started preaching the gyrations that I would go through to not cry. I would dig a thumbnail into my finger. I would do everything I could think of to not cry. I finally gave up. And I cursed my kids with that DNA. You've seen them come up here and try and pray, and they cry. But you know, when I quit apologizing, was understanding those tears are just about the heart. It's emotion. It's caring. And if I love you, what do I want back? I want love back. I don't want just truth. I want to know you care back. And I'm not saying that's limited to tears, but it's one way we show that at the heart level, you matter to me. And God says, I'd like you to matter. I'd like me to matter to you that much. And then he says, the soul. I mean, what Jesus is trying to drive at is, I want you to love me with all of me. Because if you think about it, God loved us with all of him. You can't die on a cross and not love somebody all out. I mean, I'm all in, 100%. And God says, I have loved you at that level, and what I long for more than anything else is that you'll love me back at that level. That you'll be all in with me as I am all in with you. Now, why would we do this? I want to urge you to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul this year. And I want to try and convince you today that that is the most important thing you could do this year. But I realize a lot of us are skeptical in life, and we need some more reasons for why would I do that? Why would I make that my number one priority? So I want to give you seven. And this is by no means a complete list. The first reason is I love him back because I'm accepting reality. And what I mean by that is there is a God and it's not me. I am a created being. And if I even have half a brain, I probably ought to get to know and have a good relationship with the Creator who made me. I'm not in charge of history, he is. It doesn't matter what I think of me, it matters what he thinks of me. So I ought to get to know him and have a good relationship with him. Loving God back is in my own interest because I'm created and he's Creator. I'm not running history, he is. He's not the one, I'm not the one that anybody has to stand in front of and be evaluated in their life. I do have to be evaluated by him. So part of that's accepting reality. We do what he says, we come to him and we bow down. But it's not just this forced kind of love because of how he loves us. The second reason that I think we should want to love him is that it makes life work. You've all seen these cable ads. You know, buy this pill, it'll fix everything in your life. Get this pan, this copper pan, you will be a chef. I won't ask how many of you own that copper pan. But we see these ads, this one thing, this one pill, this one exercise bike, you name it, it'll fix everything in your life. Well, I'm here to tell you today there actually is one thing that'll fix things in your life. Loving God. That will make life work. And I know you're going to sit there, you skeptics. I'm one of you. I'm a card-carrying skeptical person. Well, this is a church and you're a pastor. Of course you're going to say that. No, well, yeah, that's true. But there is another reason if it were actually true. And it is. You want to talk the one piece of the puzzle that puts everything together? It's putting God at the center and loving him. That's why Jesus says all the law and the prophets hang on these. You want to capture everything God said? You want to capture 613 rules? Don't worry about the 613 rules. Love God. Really, love God. And it all comes together. There have been a few astounding phrases in life that I've run across that have made me stop, scratch my head, and say, is that really true? One of them was spoken by a guy named Augustine. I know you all know him. You read about it, you know, anyway. He was the bishop of Hippo in what is Algeria, the 400s, recent guy. But he was a great thinker. And one of the things he said was, love God, live as you please. That's a pretty astounding phrase, isn't it? Love God, live as you please. But the more you think about it, it really is true. And his whole point was, if I love God, if I have put him at the core of my being, and being with God and pleasing God and listening to God and letting his heart come into my heart and my heart into his, and that kind of relationship with God, what am I going to want to do? I don't have to worry about it. Because that oneness with God will guide my decisions, my thoughts, my priorities, how I see other people. All of that will get changed because I love God with all my heart, all my mind, and all my soul. And it changes me. And it puts life in a whole new way, and life starts to work. You see, loving God changes us for the better. We're better people because we work at loving God. The third reason to love God is because we find love. We all need to be loved. Some of us, we act like we don't, but at our core, we are wired up to love and be loved. And we all need that. Love gives us a sense of security. It gives us a sense of worth. It gives us a sense that we're not alone. Right along there with sunlight and water and food and air, we need love. And humans can fail us, but God will never fail us to love us. We will always be able to go to Him and find love. When we need that, it will always be there. And that directly ties into number four, and that is we find in God a perfect companion. Just like we can't live without love, that is tied to we don't want to go through life alone. Yeah, we can do it, and we can tough it out, and we can real hard at saying, hey, and some of us, we've gotten hurt, we've gotten abandoned, and so we try to put up this front and keep people out and say, I don't need anybody, but we do. But we need people we can count on. That's what we've learned. We desperately need people we can count on who will be there. And that's what God offers us. He is the one person who will never abandon us. He will never be busy. He will never turn on us. And He will never die on us. He will never break off the relationship and walk away. He is the one person we can put our hand in and know that He will never throw off our hand. He loves us, and it is with a perfect love. Well, there's a few more. We find in God wisdom. When we come to God and we get close to Him, we are finding the ultimate source of wisdom. What is right? What is really important? How do I live in this situation? How do I deal with this? God is the best source of wisdom for life. And the closer we get to Him, the smarter we become because we're listening to Him. Number six is we get help. Because God says, I don't want to just be a spectator in your life. As you get close to me, I will be helping you in your life. Not just with wisdom, but with power and people and resources and all that I have at my disposal. I love you. I want to help you. Number seven is power. That goes right with that. And eight, you see, we gain, we don't lose by loving God. I think sometimes we hear that statement by Jesus and says, love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. It's like, I have to give this up. And that's not true at all. We gain by loving God. We give Him something, yes. We give Him our love. We give Him our lives. But what we get back is so much more, so much bigger. We don't lose in this. We come off the winners. Because of all God gives back to us in this love relationship. Now, how do we do this? What does this actually look like? Okay, Jim, you've convinced me. I want to love God this year with all my heart, mind, and soul. How do I do that? Well, I have to confess, I was affected by yesterday. I made a new slide today. Mark LaPlaca taught us yesterday on the Holy Spirit, and Mark is addicted to acronyms. He's just, everything's an acronym. And I thought, well, that's a good thing. I had to give people an acronym today. So how do we love God with all our heart, mind, and soul? Well, here. TCLH. Now, I couldn't come up with a word, sorry, but, you know. It's four letters, come on. The T, spend time with Him. You're never going to love God if you don't spend time with Him. It just doesn't work that way. That's true in any relationship. The more time we spend together in general, that's how we get closer, isn't it? We do things together. We talk about things together. We spend time together. Do that with Him. We've talked for the last 3 weeks about the importance of prayer. But you see, we're doing all of that praying because of this. It's how we spend time with God. And it's how we love Him with all our heart, mind, and soul. One of the ways, as we spend time with Him and we talk with Him, and we recognize that He's here with us, and it's not just at church. And that's a huge part of loving God fully, is realizing that He's also at work with us. He's in the car with us. He's when we're sitting home alone, when we're out walking, whatever we're about, God is there. And we can be talking with Him and aware that He is with us. And we can be spending time with Him in a lot more places than here inside a church building. Celebrate God. Now, the reason I put this in here is I've just gotten to be a little sensitive that in our church setting, we talk all the times about praising God and glorifying God. And I think for a lot of folks who didn't grow up in the church, it's like, what? What does that mean? Am I supposed to sing a song? Well, and that can be one of the ways we celebrate God. But as I was trying to think, what are we really talking about when we glorify God, when we praise God? Well, in our own terms that we talk about, we celebrate God, who He is, what He's done. If we have a team that could play in the Super Bowl, which we don't, you know, we would sit around and talk about that team and what they can do. And this player, and he's the best in the league, and this coach, and we would be quick to talk about all that this team can do, because we love that team, and we're celebrating them. That's what we need to do about God. Who of us doesn't like, when we're out in public, maybe we're at some party, you're in an office thing, and our spouse beside us praises us? Anybody who doesn't enjoy that, would you please, you know. We do feel good about that. It was like, wow, that felt good. Or our teens, what teen in this room isn't happy when we hear our parents saying good things about us to their friends and we're standing there? It's like, wow. Dad really feels that way? Wow. Didn't know. And we feel good about that. Don't you think God is honored if we have a discussion and say, I cannot believe what my God did this week? Or I was driving to work today and I saw this sunrise. God is so creative. And sometimes we say that to others and sometimes we say it back to God. God, home run on that sunset. I went through the flower garden. That rose, God, way to go. Or you see God move people to touch another life, and something happens, and you realize God put that all together. And you stop and say, God, high five. You're amazing. Now that blesses God back. But do you know what you've also done? Your God just got bigger for you. Because the more you focus on what God does do and His power and how He moves and how He works and how He does the impossible, it's like, wow, God, You are amazing. You are awesome. And your God gets bigger. And it's easier for you to trust Him and turn to Him and ask for His help because He's gotten bigger. As you've spent some time thinking about what He can do and what He has done and what He is doing, you're celebrating God. And everybody is blessed by that. The third way we can love God with all our heart, mind, and soul is we listen to Him. If you're like me, sometimes we fall in a trap, don't we, where all the conversation is one way, and we're either telling God what we need Him to do, or we're complaining to Him for what He hasn't done, or expressing we're really getting impatient if He'd just get around to doing what I need Him to do. And there's not enough time spent where we quit talking and we say, God, what do you think? What are you doing, God? What do you see when you look at me? Or we listen to him by opening his word. And we don't just read scripture, but we read through some section of this Bible to say, God, speak to me as I read this. Make sure I notice what you want me to hear out of these verses or these chapters. And we listen to him. That's one of the greatest acts of love that we can give another person, isn't it? To be still and really pay attention and listen to them. And we can do that for God. And the last one is we're willing to help him. That is sort of that extra step when we really care, isn't it? I have a recliner that I love. I wouldn't want you to see it. It's getting pretty dingy. But the more dingy it becomes, the more comfortable it becomes. And so, if I'm sitting there in that recliner and I'm all comfy, what am I going to get up for? Well, there's a limit to what I'll get up for. But if I really care, if it's my wife saying, could you help me? If it's one of the grandkids, Grandpa, I really need this. Well, suddenly I issue forth from the recliner and I'll help because I care. The truth is, if we really care and we see that person we care about needs our help, we're going to say, I'm there. When can I come? And that applies to God. God is working in our world. He sees the evil, the brokenness, the pain that we see, and it hurts him more than it hurts us. And he is working in our world to try and help people, touch lives, drive back evil. But he also looks at us and says, do you love me? I need your help. And one of the ways that we can show God that we really do love him is when we say, I'll get out of my comfort zone, my recliner. God, here. Take this vacation, God. I'll go on a mission trip. Saturday, you need me down at Feed My Starving Children? I'll be there. You need me over here, God? I'll be there. This neighbor is in trouble. I'll go out and have a cup of coffee with him. I'll help you, God. I want to help you because I love you. Those are practical things, and this is by no means a complete list. I was reviewing this sermon again this morning. I think, oh, I forgot that, and I forgot that, and I finally gave up. This is a list that you need to keep adding to as we figure out other ways we can love God. Here's the question I want to leave you for 2018. What can I do today to love God more than I did yesterday? If you'll ask yourself that question every day for this year, it will change your life. I promise you. And how can we, that's a pretty heavy responsibility. Why would we want to do that? Because of how much God has already loved us. And that's the foundation for this. And that's why I asked Carrie for us to delay communion till now. Because it's not just some God on a throne saying, please love me back. It is also Jesus standing here with nail scars in his hands, feet, and a spear wound in his side. And it's him saying, will you love me back? I have loved you with all my heart, with all my life. Will you love me back? And there is no better thing we could do for our own lives than to say to God, yes, I will love you with all of my heart, my mind, and my soul. Will you say that to him this year? I'm going to pray, and then we're going to take communion. We're going to do it differently. We've done it other times like this. But when you're ready, I hope you'll have that conversation with God. And when you're ready, come forward. There's three stations where you can take communion and return to your seat. We've also put communion around the kneeler. We kept that up for one more week. So if you would like to kneel and have communion, you're welcome to do that as well. In whatever way will help you and God commune and share your love for each other as you accept His love for you. Let's pray. God, first we have to thank you for you loving us and how you proved that love. How you demonstrated that love for us by Christ dying on the cross for us while we were still sinners. Father, help us love you back. Help us see the wisdom in coming to you who have already loved us with such a love. Help us to love you back. Even as we take this communion, we thank you for your love. And I'm able to offer this prayer because of the authority of Jesus. In his name.